Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette today, Wednesday, January 21st, 2026. Let's get started on the front page. At the very top of the page is a picture of Kylan Boswell getting ready to take a shot, but it says in large letters on the injured list. Illini star Kylan Boswell likely out for a month after breaking a bone in his right hand. And then following down the front page there is another large picture of Ken Grazier, and he is teaching his table to play the game Just One on Tuesday at Titan Games in Champaign. Grazier, an avid board game collector, was recently a contestant on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And we will get to that article first. The heading is Game for a Game. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Champagne Board Game Collector competes on an NPR show by Jana Wiersema. Ken Grazier has a fondness for board games. On Thursday night, however, he took part in a different type of game, guessing the last word in three limericks read by Bill Curtis on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. After introducing himself as Ken from Champaign, Illinois, Grazier answered host Peter Sagal's usual question, "What do you do there?" with an unusual response. "Well, when I'm not chasing after my four-year-old or working from home, I play a lot of board games," Grazier said over the phone. "Really?" Sagal replied. "You're one of those board game geeks that I know and admire so much." "I'm probably a little bit plus that," Grazier admitted. "The collector's sitting around 2,100 items. That's the simple answer, anyway." Grazier told the News Gazette that he has about 2,100 base games, but 3,500 items in total. "The easiest analogy I know is if you have a movie, but you also have a special features DVD. The special features is that extra bit," he said. "So I have the equivalent of 2,100 movies, but 3,500 discs." Grazier admitted that he will probably need to start culling the collection at least a little bit, but expects that even after doing so, he'll still have more games than the average person. His love of board games dates back to his college days at Penn State, which offered a weekly board game group. "I really just got hooked," he said. While each game is different, Grazier said he enjoys the puzzle of figuring out how to accomplish the set goal while still following the rules. He added that a family game night is a good alternative to spending a chunk of change at the movie theater, where costs can add up quickly, even for a small group. "I'm all for movies. I have a lot of video games. I love my video games, don't get me wrong," he said. "But there's something about sitting down around a table and playing board games with some people that's just not the same. You can't really replace that." College was also when Grazier began listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He estimated he's been tuning into the comedic news quiz show since about 2006. "It keeps me up to date with the news, but it's still entertaining and relatively lighthearted," he said. Grazier tried a few times to be a listener contestant on the show after he graduated from college, but was not selected. However, he recently tried again on a whim and got a text back asked if he was available Thursday night. Being on the air was a little bit nerve-wracking, but he still enjoyed it. "Everybody wants you to win," he said. "It's mostly about having fun, and I think the Listener Limerick Challenge is probably the easiest one." The episode, which aired Saturday, can be found at npr.org/program/waitwaitdonttellme/. Period. And for those waiting suspense, never fear. Grazier finished all three limericks correctly and won the voice of his choice on his voicemail. While there was a long list of options to choose from, Grazier picked Sagal. "He's the voice of Wait, Wait to me," he said. Continuing on at the bottom of the front page is an article about Fairlawn Real Estate, Student Housing Project Underway at X Church Site by Jana Wiersema. Construction has begun on Fairlawn's new student housing development at the former site of University Place Christian Church, with developers estimating that students will be able to move in starting in August of 2027. The development will be known as Mosaic and include 283 units and 371 beds, as well as a sky lounge, outdoor terrace, fitness center, collaboration and study areas, a courtyard, and on-site management, officials said. Smile Student Living, Fairlawn Student Housing affiliate, will manage the property. Our team has delivered multiple successful projects adjacent to the campus, and we are proud to continue that momentum with a community that elevates the student experience while reflecting our standards of quality and care, said Jason Barrickman, Chief Investment Officer at Fairlawn. The development's name was in part inspired by the Mosaic web browser that was developed at the University of Illinois. The name also speaks to the idea of a mosaic itself, distinct elements forming a unified whole, officials said. Mosaic brings together private residents, shared amenities, and the energy of the surrounding campus to create a vibrant and connected student community. Fairlawn acknowledged in its announcement that the project site at 401 South Wright Street has been the subject of local attention recently as plans have moved forward to redevelop the site. LLCs associated with Fairlawn bought the former University Place Christian Church property and an apartment building south of the church, which was once home to the Illinois Disciples Foundation, for a little over $8 million in total in October. The church went for $4.1 million, while JSM Management sold the former IDF property for $3.95 million. University Place Christian Church held its last service at the site in September and now meets at the University of the University YMCA. Ahead of Fairlawn closing its sale with the church, former congregant Leslie Colbert Baker filed an application to designate the church building as a local landmark in an attempt to prevent its demolition, but her request was denied by the City Council in October. Fairlawn, which had been largely silent about the project until Tuesday, said that the development represents a significant reinvestment in the area, transforming a long-recognized site into a modern residential community designed to serve evolving needs of today's University of Illinois students while enhancing the surrounding neighborhood. Construction costs for the five-story building are estimated to be over $30 million, according to building permits filed with the city. And there are pictures here of the rendering of Mosaic Building. It's the new student housing from Fairlawn's, and it's on 401 South Wright Street. And there's like a large facade with the main entrance at Wright Street and Stoughton Street looking southwest. This project was designed by Mode 3 Architecture and is being built by Wells & Wells Construction. And now an article about taken from WDWS Radio, episode 10, as heard on airing from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday on WDWS 1400 AM and streaming online. The first bullet point says, when Irving Azoff broke the news to his folks he was dropping out of the University of Illinois after 2 years to be a full-time music promoter, it didn't go quite as you might imagine. They were good with it, he says. My mom was a bookkeeper and my dad was part owner of a chain of pharmacies in Danville, and I was making more money than they were, so I guess they felt it was okay. 5.5 decades later, the Custard Cup fan and California music mogul, whose first management client was REO Speedwagon, and whose list these days includes the Eagles, takes a stroll down memory lane on News Gazette Radio. Again, his name is Irving Azoff, if you want to continue listening about that. On the late 60s, early 70s music scene in CU, after spending his teen years putting on teen dances at halls in Danville, when I got to the University of Illinois, we booked Chances Are, the Red Lion Inn, the Brown Jug, and tons of fraternity and sorority gigs. It was a wild and great time, and Champaign became an incredible magnet for musicians. Another bullet point, on one of his earlier clients, the late Dan Fogelberg, his one-time roommate and best friend. I was the rock and roll guy in town, and he was the folky. He was playing at the church in Urbana, in the coffee house in the basement called the Red Herring. Someone I think met in class played me a tape and had me go see him. I knew from the first moment I heard his tapes that he was an incredible talent with an incredible future. Very different from REO Speedwagon, but I thought both deserved worldwide attention, and luckily for them and me, I was right. On one of his favorite Eagles hits, "How do you pick your favorite kid? I need 15 places for my favorite Eagles songs." For those not up to their history of the civil rights movement, the Reverend Terrence Thomas stepped in to teach a lesson on Tuesday's show, debunking myths surrounding the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., among them, that MLK spread and everybody just get along message. "That's the wrong king. That's Rodney King, not Dr. King," he said. Dr. King very much understood that confrontation and conflict in a certain kind of context was needed to bring about a just society. Another bullet point, the most challenging assignment Bruce Douglas ever drew as a Star Illini guard in the 80s, Michigan State Scott Skiles, followed closely by Indiana's Steve Alford, his favorite Illini, to follow the past four decades, Darren Williams, and the most vivid moment involving one of the many milestones of his four-year college basketball career. We go back to January 28th in 1984 when Douglas set a program record for minutes played in a game, a four overtime win over Michigan. "I was really not feeling that great when the game started, and to make things worse, after we won and I played 60 minutes, we ran from the assembly hall across the street to the football stadium so we could lift weights. I was really perturbed, but coach reminded me that's what was giving me the strength to play 60 minutes. And the very last article on the front page from the Champaign County Court. 2 years for gun child porn charges dismissed. State's attorney, possession was hard to prove, by Luke Taylor. A Champaign man pleaded guilty to felon possession of a weapon on Tuesday, and as part of the agreement saw a case involving 7 counts of possession of child pornography dismissed. Mark Dyson, 49, was taken directly into custody following Tuesday's court appearance to serve a 2-year sentence in Illinois Department of Corrections. State's Attorney Julia Reed said the child porn charges were dismissed because upon further review, investigators found that it would be difficult to prove that content allegedly viewed on Dyson's computer hadn't been immediately deleted. That would be a defense to a charge of possession had prosecutors moved forward with the case. The case for unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon originated on October 5th of 2024 when Champaign police responded to a call about a domestic incident, said Assistant State's Attorney Conrad Scully. Metcad reported that there may be firearms present on the scene. On scene, officers spoke with Dyson, his wife, and their children, and his wife disclosed, that he was in possession of a firearm. Both Dyson and his wife gave permission for the house to be searched. Officers found a fully loaded Glock magazine alongside 2 loose rounds in a drawer containing masculine clothing, Scully said. Police also searched the backyard and did not find a firearm, but told Dyson's wife to call if she discovered it. Late that night, she did call, reporting that she had found a handgun under a water fountain in the backyard. Officers collected the Glock firearm, which had a fully loaded magazine, but nothing in the chamber, Scully said. Dyson was sentenced to 2 years in prison as part of the agreement, and his attorney, Jamie Props, agreed that he will not request furlough during that time. He had credit for 6 days previously served. Continuing in our communities, in Section A6, is an article from Danville about the Danville Area Community College. Longtime AD seeks early retirement. Board to vote on Tim Bunton's request under voluntary separation program, by Jennifer Bailey. One of the first Danville Area Community College employees taking advantage of the voluntary separation program is Athletic Director Tim Bunton. The DACC board, at its regular 5:30 p.m. Thursday meeting at the college, will consider approving the retirements of Bunton and Jonna Bolton, an accounts payable specialist in the business office. Under the voluntary separation program, each would receive $35,000, effective May 31st. Bunton has worked at DACC for more than 30 years. Having started in May of 1995, he plans to retire June 1st. He was named athletic director/head baseball coach during the 06-07 school year after serving as an assistant athletic director the previous 8 years. He stepped down from the baseball position following the shortened 2020 season. In a letter to the board, Bunton stated that he wants to begin the next chapter of my life. I will also take advantage of the voluntary separation program. It has been a complete privilege to work at Danville Area Community College, and I could not be more grateful to the institution, he wrote. It was a great honor to start a baseball program from scratch in 1995 and lead young men striving to become better players and people. It was also an honor to serve as the athletic director for the last 20 years and working with a fantastic coaching staff. He said he's committed to making sure there's a smooth transition for the next athletic director, and he will make sure that all commitments to the NJCAA Region 24 and the Midwest Athletic Conference are up to date. In other business, the board on Thursday also plans to act on 2 new policies regarding course instruction and generative artificial intelligence. According to DACC officials, the first new policy outlines the details allowing administrators to instruct academic courses. All instruction duties must be completed outside of the normal work hours. An AI policy establishes guidelines for the responsible use of generated AI tools by students, faculty, staff, and administrators at DACC. The policy aims to maximize the educational and operational benefits of generative AI while maintaining academic integrity, protecting privacy, ensuring equity, and mitigating potential harms, DACC officials said. This policy applies to all generative AI use on college-owned systems, college networks, and in college-sponsored activities. It also applies to the use of generative AI tools that involve college data or are used in direct relation to college coursework and operations. Other board policy revisions include standard of conduct, working hours for administrators and classified support staff expected to be physically present to fulfill their job responsibilities and email. The board also consider approving $32,800 space utilization study for DACC's main campus by DeMonica Kemper Architects. And here, a DACC Foundation update. Let's jump over to the opinion piece and check in with J. Mark Powell in his Holy Cow History. On the top of his article is a colorful vintage advertisement by the Coca-Cola Company in 1942 featuring U.S. soldiers. And then also included is a picture, a very stern portrait of Marshal of the Soviet Union, Georgi Konstantinovich Zhukov, published in Life magazine in 1945. And the article is entitled, White Coca-Cola for a Red General. Put yourself in his position. You've just led a 6.5 million man army across half a continent, ending 4 years of brutal war that's left nearly 27 million of your countrymen dead. You've just defeated the greatest military machine since Napoleon's Grand Armée, and driven one of history's worst monsters to his grave. Naturally, it's time to let your hair down and unwind, which was why the Soviet commander was more than happy to celebrate with his Western Allied counterparts in just-conquered Germany. It was May of 1945, and Supreme Allied Commander Dwight Eisenhower had invited his Soviet allies to join him for a victory party. Unknown to the Soviet commander, he was about to be introduced to something that would unleash a powerful addiction deep inside him. Was it alcohol? No. Russians are practically raised on vodka. Cigarettes? A good portion of the Soviet leadership from Joseph Stalin down used tobacco in one form or another, and the Russian variety of cigarettes was so strong they could almost blow stumps. Nope. This was a force more powerful than booze and smokes combined. Some junior American officer handed the Soviet general a glass bottle containing a dark fluid. He politely took a sip and was instantly hooked on Coca-Cola. That was a major problem when you happened to be Georgi Konstantinovich Zhukov, Marshal of the Soviet Union, a six-time recipient of the Order of Lenin, member of the Order of the October Revolution, three-time hero of the Soviet Union, and the wearer of so many medals, 50 in all, that he clanked when he walked. And the communist hero had just fallen head over heels in love with the ultimate capitalist drink. He kept downing Coke after Coke all night. Apparently, the sugary fizz touched his sweet tooth unlike anything he'd ever had. Zhukov had it bad, and that wasn't good. Silly as it sounds today, 80 years ago, being seen enjoying a product synonymous with capitalist decadence was a huge no-no in the USSR. For years, propaganda had attacked it by name as a symbol of American imperialism and Western internal decay. Merely having a Coke and a smile, was a later advertising slogan they would say, was enough to get a Soviet sent to the gulag, or worse. Stalin was obsessively paranoid and ruthlessly eliminated any rival to his power, real or imagined. His spies were everywhere, diligently looking for the tiniest speck of compromising dirt. With Zhukov now a hero in Russian eyes, the dictator would have been all too happy to remove him from the scene. Still, the marshal couldn't help himself. He kept downing Cokes like they were going out of style, even though he knew it was a huge risk every time he put a bottle to his lips. A short time later, Zhukov approached the Americans in secret with a highly classified request. Would the United States be willing to order a special shipment of Coca-Cola strictly for his personal use? But there was a significant caveat. It couldn't be dark. Like regular Coke, it had to appear clear, like vodka. The bizarre hush-hush request was sent up the chain of command until it landed on the commander-in-chief's desk with the sign that famously proclaimed, "The buck stops here." President Harry Truman realized a strategic opening when he saw one. Although the war was over, cracks were rapidly emerging in the Western Soviet alliance that had won it. All too quickly, they would widen into the Cold War. Truman was eager to foster any influential friendship on the dark side of the Iron Curtain, as it would soon be called, that he could get. So, he green-lighted the plan, operating with a degree of secrecy that rivaled the Manhattan Project. A company chemist engineered a version of Coke that retained its traditional taste while removing the caramel that gave its dark color. It was now transparent, as clear as vodka. Wink, wink. But Coca-Cola didn't stop there. The famous hourglass bottle was ditched for plain, clear glass topped with a white cap bearing a shiny red star, symbol of the Soviet Union. Anyone seeing Zhukov take a swig from it would think he was simply enjoying his national beverage. Thus, 50 cases of so-called white Coke were quietly transported through Vienna to Zhukov's headquarters, where he indulged to his heart's content without Stalin ever being any the wiser. He was smart to make his unusual request when he did. When the Soviets imposed their blockade of Berlin 3 years later, triggering the greatest international crisis since the war, there would be no more goodwill gestures. But a red general secretly went on enjoying his white Coke nonetheless. And from Urbana, in Under Our Community, Booker T. Washington STEM Academy, shots fired near Urbana School lead to lockdown, by Jana Wiersema. Police are seeking tips on a shooting that took place in the 1400 block of Eade Street on Tuesday morning. Urbana police officer found that while no individuals were wounded, multiple buildings were hit, including townhouses at Hamilton on the Park and Booker T. Washington STEM Academy. The school was placed on lockdown due to the nearby incident. Officers were dispatched to the area at approximately 9:47 a.m. after receiving multiple reports of shots fired. Champaign Police Department and the University of Illinois Police Department officers were also at the scene to assist, police said. Citizens reported seeing a dark-colored SUV speed away from the site after the shooting. Preliminary information, including video surveillance, indicates that a similarly described dark-colored SUV was observed with three unidentified individuals exiting the vehicle prior to the gunfire and returning to it after the shots were fired. Anyone with surveillance footage or information about the incident is asked to contact the Urbana Police Department at 217-384-2320, and arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of $5,000 for tips that lead to an arrest in any homicide case, $2,500 for tips leading to an arrest in a felony crime involving a firearm, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to the arrest of the person responsible for any other crime. Let's turn now to another opinion piece by Jim Dye. Moving 2028 primary date up, what's the reason for that? And there's also a picture provided here of Governor J.B. Pritzker holding up a page showing his signature on the Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act during a signing event on January 8th at Joliet Junior College. Illinois Democrats are seeking to change the date of the state's March 2028 primary, possibly to give Pritzker an advantage in the presidential race. As he runs for his inevitable third term in November, Governor J.B. Pritzker continues to play cat and mouse with the public concerning his even bigger plans for 2028, running for president. In media interviews, the multi-billionaire acknowledges he's not ruling out a run for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. True enough, as far as it goes, but his deeds, not his words, speak to his real intent. The biggest hint, literally, so far is that Pritzker has been shedding weight. It's easy to see, and the less rotund he is, the better visual impression he makes to his out-of-state voters. But the best hint that came last week when Democratic Party leaders, for reasons they unsuccessfully concealed, informed the Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee that Illinois wants to hold an early primary election in 2028. The current 2028 Illinois primary is set for March, the same month as the upcoming March 17th, 2026 primary, when party leaders suggest an early 2028 primary. They mean really early. Why a date change? Here's the pretext. Illinois offers candidates ample opportunities to reach voters of all backgrounds. We are a microcosm of America and the perfect analog to test a potential nominee's capabilities on the national stage, said State Democratic Party Chairwoman Lisa Hernandez. But if that's important in 2028, why wasn't it equally important in 2024, 2020, 2016, 2012, 2004, and 2000, and all the other presidential primaries elections in the past century? Note the missing year, 2008, in the list above. That provides the answer. In 2008, a prominent Illinois Democrat was running for president. Likewise, in 2028, another prominent Illinois Democrat will follow suit. Democrats believe an earlier primary will provide a political advantage, good media coverage, name recognition, campaign donations to the favorite son. This is an obvious replay of the 2008 ploy to boost the then U.S. Senator Barack Obama's campaign for Democratic nomination for president. In his case, it worked well. In the February 5, 2008 Illinois Democratic presidential primary, Obama crushed former First Lady Hillary Clinton by more than 700,000 votes. Now Pritzker backers are running the same play. It's also obvious that it raises a question. Why can't politicians acknowledge the obvious? The answer is that when it comes to self-serving political maneuvers, the truth is simply not in them. Pritzker is running hard for president while also running hard for re-election as Illinois governor. Might something derail his plans to move into the Oval Office? Sure. Will it? Probably not. Pritzker has been traveling all over the country to give speeches to Democratic audiences. He's been picking one public fight after another with President Donald Trump in order to elevate his standing as Trump's chief antagonist. He's also been seeding Democratic campaign treasuries across the country with his cash stash to buy goodwill. If you see me losing 40 pounds, that means I'm either running or have cancer, Barber said. That's what Governor Haley Barbour had said when he was seeking the GOP's 2012 presidential nomination. And we're going to take a break now with our first half of the News Gazette. I'll be back in a moment.